Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, now the 28th day of December 2019, as the year draws to a close. I'm your host, Mark Hall, and I got a special show for you this evening. What I did was an interview with a good friend of mine, a fellow talk show host that I've known for quite a few years. Every now and then we do a show called Drive Time Friday together, and I think you'll enjoy the discussion. Very topical about the events of the week, or actually the last couple of weeks. This is Tim Kern. We share a background, as it turns out, in engineering, electronics, and aviation, too. Tim does a lot of writing as well, especially when it comes to aviation-oriented issues. And as a result, he gets to spend more time at fun places like Oshkosh than I generally do of late. So let me say, welcome, Tim. It's good to hear your voice again, and how you doing?
I'm doing just great. Here in the Midwest, we've been looking at 50s and 60s for the past week, and it's just glorious out here.
Okay, well, we
most
had
of the
a
time. I think the average temperature is supposed to be about 15, and it's more like 50. So I like it.
Okay, well, we're more close to average here. We're actually getting some moisture. Snowstorms come through every few days. It's not surprising at all. We have not only a white Christmas, a white New Year's, and sometimes a white Thanksgiving, but definitely some snow around here at 9,000 feet.
Yeah, that's pretty normal.
And anyway, let me just ask you, with so much going on, where would you like to start, since it's been a while since we've talked?
Well, I don't know how much recapping you've done of the bogus impeachment that turns out not to be.
Well, we didn't actually do a show last week, if you may not recall, but you weren't here, neither was Jeff. So as far as how bogus is it, let's do the Karnak thing.
Well, it's extremely bogus. First off, of course, the impeachment was over two supposed crimes that aren't on the books.
Right.
So it's really hard to have a crime that isn't in the statute someplace because there's no crime.
Well, you know, think about it. If there's no crime, you don't need any evidence to accuse somebody of it, so it fits.
Well, yeah, perfect. And then the second thing is that, you know, the urgency was stressed all through the hearings, which is why they, you know, couldn't get any decent witnesses, couldn't do any cross-examination, couldn't present a case, couldn't do any of that stuff. So, you know, it was so urgent they had to push this all through. But then Nancy Pelosi, for some reason, thinks she's running the Senate now and doesn't want to send anything over unless she thinks it's going to be fair. First of all, fair is laughable on the surface of it. And then the second thing is she doesn't run the Senate. She needs to be told that in no uncertain terms.
Well, she probably needs to be told that she's violating her oath of office and get accused of what she's actually doing, which is treason, sedition, and all kinds of participation, obstruction of justice, you name it. There really are a whole lot of crimes that are being covered up and participated in by various members here. I think probably most Americans see through it, Jeff. Tim, and understand that one of the things that's going on here, the reason why they hold it up, is that they're not going to participate in an actual trial while there's a chance that Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, Creepy Joe, and a whole bunch of other people, including Adam the Shiftless One, may actually get called, put under oath, and forced to testify about the criminality they've been engaged in. So basically, they're waiting, I think, until they get their ducks lined up. If they can blackmail enough senators to where either they don't have an actual trial, I think they would prefer to see the whole thing go away at this point rather than have what's really going on be truly exposed by an honest trial. Better still, if they can blackmail enough senators that they simply go in and slam dunk and say, okay, the Senate will convict without evidence, too. That's what she's waiting for. There's one other possibility, and that, of course, is that the Shiftless One has already outlined this. They intend to come after Pence as well. And guess what? If they can get both Pence and Trump at the same time on bogus charges, well, then who gets to be president? Anyway, comments.
Well, first off, there's nothing on Pence at all. Secondly, of course,
but that's not any different than what's going on otherwise. If they can get Trump, they can get Pence.
Well, they can't get Trump unless they send the articles over to the Senate. And I don't believe that that's true, by the way. I disagree with some pretty smart legal people on that. But, what the Senate could do without Nancy bringing the articles over at all. They are a matter of public record. The vote has been recorded. So all the Senate has to do, any senator can introduce a resolution to adopt or reject the articles which have been approved by the House.
You're right.
They don't have to have a trial. All they have to do is say, we reject these articles. This resolution is to reject them out of hand. They're unqualified. They make no sense. We're not going to deal with them. And then it's over. They don't have to do anything. My preference, as you know, is to have a long, drawn-out trial where everybody gets pulled up on the stand and everybody gets cross-examined.
Exactly.
And I mean everybody from Strzok and Page through McCabe, Comey, Hillary, Barack, everybody that had their hands in it. Susan
Eric
Rice.
Sharamella, even the name that shall not be named?
Well, he's nothing because...
yeah, you're right.
Well, the entire whistleblower idea is moot because they released the transcript. The whistleblower is completely irrelevant to this. Who he is or who he isn't, what he heard or what he didn't, what he made up or what he didn't, what he was told, what he wasn't told, none of it matters because the transcript is out. So I don't know why anybody gives a hoot about the whistleblower except for Adam Schiff's duplicity in it.
Well, that's the point. It's about the cover-up. And the cross-examination would reveal how deep this rabbit hole goes.
There's a lot of rabbits in this. I don't like it one bit.
All right. Well, I completely agree with you on that score. It's pretty nasty. Let me just ask you a teeny bit of speculation here. Because obviously this is completely unprecedented in U.S. history. There's never been anything quite this bogus. I've been saying for a little over a week now that this is Banana Republic America, about day 10 or whatever it is, simply because for all of their prattling and prancing about how they just love that Constitution that they've never read, they literally put a wooden stake through it. And are essentially saying now we could care less what the written law is. Obviously, we're oath breakers from the get-go. And so where are we? Put this in historic perspective, if you will, and speculate a little bit. Do you think Trump is going to man up? I don't expect, for example, that Lindsey Graham and Mitch McConnell will do the right thing in the Senate like you suggested and actually open evidentiary hearings at all. So what do you think is really likely at this point?
What's really likely is that Nancy will have to walk these things over at some point, even though, as I pointed out, that's not necessary. But she'll walk them over and gripe about it all the time about how she couldn't figure out which managers to send to doctor whatever they're going to send over. And then Mitch McConnell's going to entertain a resolution to dismiss it, and that'll be the end of it.
I kind of tend to agree.
That's what I think will happen.
All right, now there's another subplot here. We talked about it for about 30 seconds just before we came on air, and I mentioned it. A lot of folks that listen to the network here have probably heard it, and it ties into a number of other stories that we'll get to in just a few minutes. But certainly there is a larger duplicity at work, because obviously if they can deep six the president, impeach him without evidence, without charges, why not, while you're at it, go for Mike Pence too, and that way you can clear the deck and prepare Nancy Pelosi to come in and, go full tilt boogie socialist on us. So, Schiff has already been on some of the TV shows, the talking heads, talking about, oh, we're going to come after, we have evidence. Oh, really? Well, that'll be a change. We have evidence about Mike Pence, too. Go ahead.
Well, he had a whole bunch of evidence that was going to come out about Trump, too, but none of it ever did.
So did Mueller, yeah.
There wasn't any. You know, there was no evidence, and there is no. It's ridiculous that they're even putting this out.
But ridiculous is what we see now on a daily basis, Tim. Seriously, we're at the point where things that would have been considered obscenely, absolutely unbelievable ridiculous are now happening. And people are, you know, those that have paid attention, shaking their heads and going, I can't believe these people are doing this. But they are.
Well, I told you last summer that Trump was going to be impeached.
Sure.
And
we didn't argue.
Well, you didn't believe me. Do you believe me now?
Oh, no, I believed it then. I just wasn't sure that the people would be absolutely as insane as they are. And you're right. There's a line from Robert Heinlein I like. He says, never underestimate the power of human stupidity. So here we are.
Well, the danger of stupid people in large numbers, too.
Yeah.
I can't remember who said that.
The madness of crowds was the talking about the earlier Great Depression and even prior to that, panics.
Yeah, it's pretty ugly. So what I'm really worried about here is that McConnell being the wuss is a good word.
Sellouts, the word I prefer sometimes.
That he has always been, is that he's going to remain true to form. And I'm worried that he's going to do that and be rolled by Chuck Schumer, who is six times as smart as he is. And I'm being generous.
Yeah.
To Mitch. You remember what Chuck Schumer did to the Waco hearings?
Sure.
He completely derailed them. He walked right around Representative Bill McCollum, who was also stupid. And
probably for sale, too, because, as you know, Waco was one of the biggest cover-ups of a mass murder in U.S. history.
Well, sure it was, but the whole point was he derailed it. He made it about Kiri Jewell, and, you know, the miner that David Wayne Howell was messing with, apparently. But he completely changed the entire topic. Remember how Bill Clinton's China money laundering and all of those felonies were dropped in favor of Monica Lewinsky?
Sure.
That was another big fix, because Americans couldn't handle the fact that Bill Clinton was helping the Chinese spy on us and giving them secret stuff and opening up, you know, getting rid of all the barriers to trade that we had in secret things. They couldn't stand that.
It was open treason.
Yeah, they didn't want to deal with treason, and they didn't want to deal with the important stuff, so they said, oh, well, Monica was on her knees. And everybody can understand that, because we do that to all our interns, right? So the problem was there. Of course, the fix was in, and one of the Senate votes being 99-0, you could kind of tell that this was not going to go anywhere, because you can't find 99 senators to agree on, you know, the toppings for their hot dog. So that was probably a bad idea to say that. But the idea is that, you know, we are ignoring the total hijacking of this entire process. And Alexander Hamilton has been quoted in, you know, Federalist 65 saying how he didn't think that, you know, how he was worried that impeachment could become a partisan tool. Not using those exact words, but basically saying, you know, destroy the separation of powers. And set it up so that any president who disagreed with Congress could be thrown out of office. And he said that kind of constitutional or unconstitutional abuse is quite equivalent to what we're seeing.
And, you know, and it's ironic here, Tim, that this may be the only time that either of us can think of where we probably would agree with one of the scummiest of the founding fathers, which is Alexander Hamilton.
Well, yes, I've often said that the only good thing that Aaron Burr ever did was shoot Alexander.
But he was a bad guy. He was an imperialist. He was a monarchist. He was basically anti to everything that most of the other good founders, like Jefferson and Madison and you name it, were for, which is to basically a republic if you can keep it.
Well, and we're barely hanging on at this point. There's so many other things to talk about.
Well, before we go, Tim, wait a second.
So-called impeachment is just ridiculous.
Right, and it is a smokescreen, and it's being used to cover up a lot of really other, more important things, if you will, the bigger issues behind the curtain. But I did at least, you know, telegraph this, and I'll let you talk about it. I mentioned Pence, and I know you said when it comes to Pence and what's going on, you did have a comment you wanted to share with the audience, those that hadn't heard this story before.
Well, yeah, I'll just tell you briefly how I met Mike Pence. It was a number of years ago. I had just moved to Indiana, and he was the U.S. representative for my district. And I didn't know who he was or anything, but I remember walking up to Walmart on a really nasty November afternoon where it was like trying to rain and trying to snow and not doing a very good job of either one, and the wind was nasty. And I'm walking up behind this guy, and the first thing I noticed was he had a really nice brown leather jacket. I went, wow, that's a cool leather jacket. Then I realized he had a really good haircut, which you don't see in my part of town. And he's ringing the bell for the Salvation Army, standing out there freezing his butt off. It's colder than heck. The wind is blowing. He's got nobody around him. He's got no tags on him that say, hi, I'm Mike Pence. He didn't have any, you know, brochures or campaign people. He's standing there all alone ringing the bell. So I asked him, and I don't know what emphasis I used. I could have said, what are you doing here? Or what are you doing here? Or what are you doing here? Or something like that. But those were the words. And he said, you know, he's been doing this since he was in college, and he wasn't about to stop now just because he had a job in Washington. And I thought, that is really pretty cool. So we chatted for a couple of minutes. I put $10 in the bucket because I love the Salvation Army. And then I wrote a little note to the newspaper relating that, which one of his campaign staffers picked up from the paper and called me and said, is this true? I said, yeah. Can we use it? I said, if you think it's something you can use. Well, they never did use it. But he never did forget my name either. We would go and I remember going to a rally when he was running for governor. Huge, huge rally. Not Trump size, but a huge rally for out here. And I was sitting way off to the side. I was in the front row, but I was so far from the stage, all I could get was, you know, the back of his head pretty much. But he walked in the side door, and he walked along, and he saw me in the crowd. We were all standing up because he was coming in. And he stopped right in front of me, and he held out his hand. He said, hi, Tim, I'm glad you're here. And then he went up, and he gave his talk. And, of course, everybody behind me is going, who the hell are you? You know? But it was great. And I've met him on many other occasions at aviation events. He's a big aviation proponent. He was governor when we repealed the tax on aviation labor. We were losing. There were only three states that had it. Virginia, of course, Kansas, not surprisingly, and Indiana, for Pete's sake. So that was something I agitated for. And my Democratic representative, my Democratic senator, and our Republican governor got together on this, and they eliminated that tax. So I've got nothing but good stuff to say about Mike Pence. And, you know, as corny as it sounds, where he would never meet with a woman without having his wife present and all that. Well, I think he's looking like one of the smartest guys in America right now.
Okay.
And,
well,
I can't tell you too many nice things about Mike Pence. I mean, I can't tell you enough nice things about Mike Pence. He's really, what you see is what you get.
Okay, so you're a Pence fan, and essentially, I don't think there's any doubt that all of us understand that what's going on here is purely political. It's about essentially saying we hate everything that these people stand for. How much of Pence, presidency would change what Trump is doing? I tend to think that there probably are very few guys that could get away with what Trump is trying to do, or we're told he's trying to do, even if he hasn't actually drained much of the swamp or done too many things that we would have thought that he was put in office to do. Still, at least there has been some movement or discussion about things in the right direction, and that is a major change from anything we've seen.
Yes, absolutely. And I fully agree that that's a big piece of why I'm worried that he might succeed. You know, that Pelosi and Schiff and Nadler and the rest of the crooks might succeed. I'm worried that they have the support of the press, which, of course, you know, reinforces their stupid, unconstitutional positions. And I'm really worried for the stupidity, I hate to say that about my fellow Americans, but there's some really heavy-duty stupidity going on here.
And it's
because of our, I believe it's largely because of our federal mucking around in education and the teachers' unions, which, you know, aren't about teaching but are about unions. So we got a lot of stuff going on.
I agree. We're at what Heinlein, again, in a reference to one of my favorite authors growing up, would have called a cusp. One of those places where we're balanced,
yes,
on the knife edge, and it goes one way or the other from here, but one thing's for sure, it doesn't stay put the way that it currently is. And that's the big issue. Where does America go? How far down does it fall? And on that score, I guess we're just going to have to wait and see.
Well, we're going to see, but I have a feeling that, and you're going to bring this up momentarily, I'm sure, about Virginia, we may have a really hot summer this summer.
And, that's the intent.
I may personally be vacationing in Virginia this summer.
On purpose?
You better believe it.
All right. Well, I think probably most folks understand what you're implying with that. And we've only got about 2 minutes or so before the break, but we can at least mention it. And I think most of the regular listeners here, certainly those that hear my news show, are aware of it. But Virginia looks like a test case for Civil War 2.0. And it's perhaps possible that the first shots will be fired there. In the last few weeks, matter of fact, since we last did a show, a number of counties in Virginia have gone Second Amendment sanctuary counties. You've got, in some cases, sheriffs saying, if I have to, I'll deputize half the county. And in other places where the county commissioners, and most of them, by the way, unanimously saying, we're not going to put up with this infringement. We took an oath before God to preserve and protect and defend the Constitution. It includes that shall not be infringed language. And I wish they'd even be a little bit more blunt. I'm sure some of them have, and said, look, you know, Governor Blackface and the scumbags there that are oath breakers can call it whatever they want when they say we're going to pass a law. But if it's a law in violation of the Constitution, as Amger says, it's no law at all. That's about as clear as it can be in American law and history. They don't have the authority to pass a something and call it a law. It's called color of law, in law anyway, and say they're going to take away people's firearms, even though, of course, it's been done.
It's true, but here's the problem. You have to prove you're an injured party. You have to bring suit, and it has to get all the way to the Supreme Court before that law is stricken down. So the problem that we have is that that law is going to be in effect, and the governor Ralph Northam is talking about calling out the National Guard and a whole bunch of stuff. And the question there is going to be, will the National Guard shoot other Virginians? And will the Virginians shoot the National Guard? And either way, I don't like the prospects there. I've got my own thoughts on career military. I've got my own thoughts on all that. We can pick that up at another time.
Well, we will. We'll pick that up when we get back after the bottom of the hour, because not only do we have the issue of the National Guard, but remember, Virginia has been invaded. That's how the communists managed to take over to begin with. They have sanctuaries for illegals. They've got all kinds of people that are there that vote, even though they don't necessarily have any constitutional authority to do so. And the question is it only the National Guard, which by and large is probably going to refuse such an order anyway, that Virginians have to worry about?
They won't refuse it. They would hand their mothers over to ISIS for their pensions. Don't give me that.
Okay, well, that's a good point, and I guess we'll find, well, we may or may not find out, because one of the things that I am seeing some indications of is that there are, let's just say there are plenty of foreign troops also ready to be brought into service. Virginia is a test case on a lot of fronts for a whole lot of things that we're probably going to get to see play out, whether we like it or not, and that's the bigger issue here.
Well, I don't want to deny the Virginians voting. I mean, they earned that right when they fought in the Civil War. So we have to make sure that they are covered.
Okay.
That was sarcasm, by the way.
Yeah, and I'm waiting for the music. We should have music by now. There we go. There's the music. That means we will be right back in just a few minutes here, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks, now to the second segment of the show for this Saturday evening.
And we're doing things a bit differently this evening. I'm bringing you a discussion I had with a fellow talk show host and good friend of mine, Tim Kern, during what otherwise might qualify as a slow news week. And what news there is arguably qualifies as smokescreen.
And that it's being used to cover up some of the fire that really is important that, as far as the waste stream is concerned, they're not paying any attention to. That's kind of where we ended up the first segment, certainly talking about Virginia and the continuing attempt to foment a Civil War 2.0 there. What's interesting to me, Tim, is that there is so much, again, going on behind the scenes. And I want to point to one other story. We mentioned several things as we went to break, and maybe some of the news we didn't explicitly cover, but Governor Blackface Northam there, one of the biggest scumbags in the U.S., and this is a nation that even includes the likes of California's Governor Moonbeam and his follow-on, the traitor on the left coast. So when he's in that crowd, you know he's a pretty nasty fellow when it comes to oath-breaking. But they are floating not only ideas out there and seeing who would pick up on them, like using the National Guard, but now they're talking about, last week, deploying roadblocks at county and state levels to cut off of the from the rest of the state, the rural counties, the access into the state, and with the possibility of doing things like shutting down internet and communications for some of those sheriffs that actually honor their oath before God, as opposed to you know, the Bolsheviks running the state. So much going on there, but this story came out this week about the Commonwealth of Virginia budget bill that's allocated $250,000. Actually, it's not a big number. They buried it in here, I think, knowing full well that this would come up and that it would be kind of a red flag, pun intended, to those that are looking to see what Virginia is going to do next. So they have increased the budget for the, net increase in the operating costs of adults' correctional facilities resulting from the enactment of unconstitutional sentencing location. In other words, further infringement. Prohibiting the sale, possession, transport of assault firearms. So they got basically $50,000 and a bunch of buckets to essentially say, hey, anything that we don't like, we're going to steal your guns and we're going to provide more money to the prisons to incarcerate those of you who survive the attempts to take them. And if anything, Tim, the money isn't that big of a deal. It's more like here is yet another little poke. Going to poke the honest citizens of Virginia and just tell them what we've got in the plan.
Well, I think what you're missing is that all of these counties are looking at getting a chunk of that $250,000. And it's just going to be said, well, you know, we're going to give that to you, but only if you're going to allocate these beds to the guys we're going to arrest for this kind of a problem. Now,
and some of them have already said, we're not going to take the money and we're not going to allow the money to be spent furthermore.
Well, yeah, sure. And but you have to understand, I mean, Virginia's Attorney General, General Herring, just this week said...
Red Herring?
When the General Assembly passes new gun safety laws, they will be enforced and they will be followed. These resolutions, he's talking about the sanctuary city things, our sanctuary counties. These resolutions have no legal force, and they're just part of an effort by the gun lobby to stoke fear. Well, first place, he is right. They have no, you know, calling yourself a sanctuary does not exempt you from the law. But it's hilarious because of the sanctuary city movement all over the rest of the red-colored America, or the blue-colored America, I mean. So... if sanctuary cities really have, and sanctuary counties have no force in law, which is true, then he ought to be griping about them all over the rest of the state, and we ought to have a movement nationwide to strike down these so-called sanctuaries.
Well, you're talking about sanctuaries for illegals that, by definition, are illegals, even though they are now trying to outlaw the use of the word.
Well, yeah, you can get kicked off of Facebook or a lot of other places for saying illegal invaders, which is what they are. And I still keep getting a kick out of the fact that, oh, they're taking the children away from these people. Well, I'm thinking they take the children away from every other criminal. Why not these days?
They take them away from honest people, Tim. All that somebody has to do is call and say, I overheard an argument in your house, and they will come and take away children. In so many countries, counties and cities and places in America, without so much as a buy your leave. We'll put the kids in child protective services. We'll ruin their lives for a little while we sort it out. And meanwhile, we'll put restraining orders on everybody, all because of an accusation. It's the essence of what red flags to take their guns is about.
Right. Well, that's one level of it. The other is the purely criminal level. When daddy and mommy are caught running a meth lab, they separate them from their children. It's a crime. You lose your kids when you commit crimes and you go to jail. You should. You don't want the kids growing up with a bunch of criminal parents.
Well, unfortunately, if what's happening now, and here this is going to sound a bit cynical, it's exactly the opposite. They don't care about the criminals that are raising kids if they're running a meth lab. They do care about the criminals that they claim are criminals if they're actually teaching their children to shoot or read the Bible or maybe not even getting their required vaccine infestations.
Well, we can get into vaccine some other time.
Yeah, and let's not go there now. But you get the point. In other words, it's all about what's politically incorrect. It has nothing to do with what the quote-unquote law says. And you use that term. That's the thing I wanted to throw back and forth here just for a minute. Because there is one thing that literally connects all of these dots, and it's the idea that we are no longer a nation of law, but of men. And it really bugs me to hear a Nancy Pelosi or an Adam Schiff for brains, or even a Chucky Schumer, who knows better, talking about the law, when they know blankety-blank and well that they put their hand on a Bible and swore before a God that they don't believe in to preserve and protect and defend the supreme law against enemies foreign and domestic. And so the point is, we don't know what the law is anymore. We see it with the impeachment. We're seeing it in Virginia.
I can tell you exactly what the law is from our favorite American, Aaron Burr. Vice President Aaron Burr is famous for saying law is whatever is boldly asserted and plausibly maintained. And that is what the definition of law is to these people.
Now, that's an interesting point, because ultimately what you're saying here is that history, the written law, doesn't matter anymore. Now, I've been saying that for a long time. It's very clear. Shall not be infringed has not been the actual law of the land since the Supreme Court didn't understand what a weapon of military utility was back in 1938. At least that's what we're told, in spite of shall not be infringed.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is that all these bogus laws, going all the way up to last month's impeachment, all of this is whatever is boldly asserted and plausibly maintained. If the Senate just said, we're never going to talk to you people, that's not even a real indictment. There's nothing to consider here. There's no statute been broken. There's no nothing. And of course, their comeback to that is, well, now we want to have some more impeachment hearings and impeach them on some other stuff.
Why not? It's working so far. We don't even have to follow what is or isn't the law. Here's the problem, Tim. I think we're on the same page here. Most Americans are so ignorant of what the law really is. They don't have a clue when it's being trashed and thrown, George W. Bush famously called it a GD piece of paper. And he's proven correct in hindsight.
Well, obviously, and of course, Obama said that the Constitution was in his way. Well, that was the whole idea, Barack, to put it in the way of tyrants, to put it in the way of people that make stuff up as they go along, to put it in the way of those who will boldly assert falsehood and plausibly maintain it.
But
unless we get this swamp drained, and I mean drained, I don't mean Jeff Sessions drained, I mean really drained, nothing is going to change except for the worse, and it's going to happen so fast, we're not going to believe it.
Okay.
Germany turned into Nazi Germany overnight.
And the same thing was true in the Bolshevik Revolution. It happened very, very rapidly. And it happened in Virginia, for crying out loud. We saw Virginia go Bolshevik literally overnight.
Well, the whole First World War was a mistake, and it became a real problem for the world. And we can't let this happen. We have to make sure that every step of this is either knocked down or examined and found to be true. We cannot just continue listening to Wolf Blitzer tell us what the law is.
Okay, well, let me share with you one element of this. It's the smoke that's in plain view, and it describes the level of ignorance in the country. Most Americans have heard now that the president was impeached. And I guarantee you, Tim, there's a sizable percentage, I'm guessing the number's probably at least 1 in 3, that's wondering, why is he still in office? He was impeached. And they're so ignorant of history, they don't understand there's a two-part process, that the first part was pretty well short-circuited anyway, and they think impeachment equals removal. But that's simply because they're ignorant of the document.
Not only that, I had a friend's son. He's old enough to know better. He's like 17. And he said, well, why isn't Hillary the president now?
Exactly.
And she's still wondering that, but, you know, he should know better.
Well, and by the same token, I've beat this horse for a long time, and it bugs me, and it still bugs me that the president, we talked about this, I think, wrote that letter to Nancy Pelosi. So many elected representatives don't know what kind of government they put their hand on a Bible and swore to preserve, protect, and defend, which is why Franklin famously said, a republic, madam, if you can keep it. Well, they don't even know that democracy is forbidden by the Constitution.
Well, it's not forbidden. It's simply not there.
Well, it's not there.
It's not there is not allowed.
Well, and the reason why I put it
isn't there.
It's simply not there. The word does not appear, not in the Bill of Rights, not in the founding documents in any way, shape, or form. Not democratic, not democracy, or anything else. However, what is in the Constitution, and this is the point I like to make, is a whole lot of stuff that amount to impediments, prohibitions against democracy. The Bill of Rights is a bunch of thou shalt nots. The whole idea of supermajorities, including to convict an impeached president, is anti-democratic. The whole idea of separation of powers, because as Madison said, we can't imagine in the hands of anybody other than God Almighty, the three powers of the executive, legislative, and judicial branches would be combined in one hand or set of hands. So over and over again, if you read all of those things in the Constitution, almost all of them have to do with impediments to a simple democracy or a demonocracy overriding the rights, liberty, life, property of everybody else in the name of a majority vote.
Well, sure, and the Constitution also says that the states will guarantee to their citizens a republican form of government.
Exactly, which is a prohibition of democracy, because a republic is not a democracy, and Franklin knew that. You know, I like to quote Madison. He said, such democracies have in general been as short in their lives as they have been violent in their deaths. The devil's own government was the way, I believe it was Trench Cox, put it. Any number of examples, they discussed it and they said, no, we're going to make sure we put all of these things in place so we don't devolve into a democracy, which is what they're pushing for.
Of course, and one of the biggest pieces we've seen of that is in the move to get rid of the Electoral College.
You betcha.
We already lost the Senate. Which, you know, just in
1913,
we got the
18th. 17th, yeah, I 17th, forget the number.
18th Amendment that allowed for the direct election of senators, which turned senators into represent national offices.
And so people are aware of that.
Huge blow against federalism.
And let's go there for a second, because again, I think our listeners probably have a far better understanding of history and the actual impediments to democracy than most do. But you're right. The whole idea of the bicameral House, a Senate, and a House of Representatives, the representatives were to represent the people of the districts. That was as close as we get to direct representation. The senators, two from each state, were supposed to represent the states. They were answerable up until that evil amendment to the state legislatures.
Right. And it was the 17th. I thought I had that right.
I was looking it up here. Yeah, 17th. You're exactly right. Elected by the people. And ultimately, what that did was it took the power of the states away at the federal government as a check on democracy.
Absolutely. So, it was a huge, huge stake in the heart of federalism and of the actual constitutional structure, which is why it required an amendment.
And that's why it was 1913, Tim, was probably up until maybe the last couple of years, one of the most evil years when it came to undermining the republic that we've had. We had the 17th Amendment. We had
the National Bank, the Federal
Reserve. Yeah, the Federal Reserve and the enforcement arm, the IRS.
And I love how they call that a service, too.
Yeah, it's a service, all right. It just doesn't service. It's kind of like the way a child prostitute is forced to service a customer.
I was going to say it feels like we've all been serviced by it at one time or another.
Well, and the truth is the idea of an unconstitutional, dishonest weight and measure is about as antithetical to the Constitution as anything that we could see. And of course, that 13th Amendment or that 1913 Amendment to establish an unconstitutional Federal Reserve has been at the heart of so much of the evil that has followed.
Well, of course, that's why they needed an amendment, and that's what made it constitutional.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you amend the Constitution, you get what you get. Could I recommend something there to the audience here? We've got I watched a most remarkable, clear-cut, very short film the other day called The Biggest Scam. And it's probably directed at intelligent high schoolers or adults. And it talks about how the Federal Reserve always wins and how it is destroying our system of values. And I mean monetary values and economic values. It's very clearly laid out, very simple, easy to watch, and gets right to the point. I thought it was going to be an hour and a half and I'd be asleep, but it's more like 20 minutes and it's really, really intense. It's
okay.
Quite good.
So the video is called The Biggest Scam. And is there any other identifying factor that you might want to point out?
Not that I recall.
Okay, so folks can search for that. I'll try to put a link, I'll at least put the tag in the show here. Now, while you mentioned that one, of course, we've got to mention probably the best book, the most approachable book ever written on the subject. You know what I'm going to say? G. Edward Griffin and The Creature from Jekyll Island, talking about the Fed. Now, let me say this. When I said unconstitutional, I was referring to not the 16th Amendment that established the direct taxing of the peons, but I was referring to the Federal Reserve itself. You notice there is nothing in the Constitution that allows for the Congress to delegate its singular authority to regulate the value of coin to any other entity, or public-private. So the Federal Reserve is, in fact, unconstitutional.
Oh, the Federal Reserve, no question of it. And you can go all the way back to Jefferson's letter to Washington on the constitutionality of a national bank.
Sure. It's been one of the biggest arguments in American history. We've had several of them.
Yeah. That's where one of the times when Jefferson lost to Alexander Hamilton and Washington allowed a national bank, which, of course, Andrew Jackson then freed us from. And we had a century of progress after that.
Yeah, a den of vipers, as he correctly put it.
Yep. I mean, there's a lot of things about Andrew Jackson that a lot of people don't like, especially when they put modern values to what he was up to. On the other hand, he saw things extremely clearly. He was almost a Donald Trump that way. He's this is garbage. We're going to get rid of it.
When it comes to all the things the guy did, you have to admit and admire his standing up to the banksters as probably top of the heap. Truly an exemplary moment in U.S. history on that score.
Well, he was not a member of the elite ruling class, you recall. I mean, he was a general. He was a field commander. He's more of a Rommel than a Hitler, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Well, so what we're talking, go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's pretty
well, all I was going to say is what we've been outlining here for the last few minutes is a hopefully general understanding And it goes back to this idea of what the heck is the rule of law. And you're right. Essentially, what you quoted there was might makes right and propaganda makes right. And it's a very Hitlerian thing. If you can run the Ministry of Truth, it's Orwellian, it's Hitlerian, it's big lie. But it's all the same thing. We will establish law by simply convincing people that, no, they have a democracy. If we can convince a majority to take by hook or by crook, the lives, liberty, property, firearms, children of the other 49%, we win. Especially if we get the 49% disarmed and people are too stupid to know what's been done to them.
Well, of course. I mean, that's been going on since Julius Caesar established the Roman Empire. He said, well, we don't need no stinking Senate anymore. We'll just have an empire. How's that? And eventually, you know, Brutus and Casca and the gang got together, and so we don't like that anymore. But they still maintained the empire, didn't they?
They lost in the long run. Yeah. Well, and not only that, there's another element of this that kind of fits, too, because for all of his prattling, if you will, about the FISA court and the abuses of the FBI and the other three-letter agencies and the political machinations, the enemies list, you name it, Obama essentially overturning an election, what did the Senate do and what did Donald Trump sign but a reauthorization of the very FISA Act and some of the abominations that were used to try to create a coup in the first place and overturn the presidency. So what is going on here?
The whole FISA, the whole system, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, that entire system, including the FISC, the FISA court.
The Star Chamber Court.
The entire system is set up to give the color of law to something that is patently illegal. They're saying it's absolutely illegal. That's why we need this secret court to make it legal. It's not legal. It's wrong. You can't do it. And this is all out of the good old Patriot Act. Thank you, George W. Bush. And all the panicked would-be tyrants of 2001.
A very successful false flag, whether you know who done it or not, it was certainly successful to the extent that everything that was supposed to happen has since happened when it comes to destroying what was left of the rule of law.
Well, you in the immortal words of whoever the heck it was, Rahm Emanuel, never let a crisis go to waste.
Yep, and they didn't. Well, even if you have to create the crisis, as we're seeing.
Well, I'm not sure that 9/11 was a created crisis, but I'll tell you one thing. They sure didn't waste it. They had all that stuff sitting on the shelf waiting to go, and they said, okay, run it.
Exactly. So that's the point. You know, whether it was just a really, really amazing fortuitous coincidence that just happened to work out in accord with their plans, or whether they allowed it or whether they instigated it. Well, you know, a fellow named FDR that none of us admire essentially said, hey, when you see something that looks like a happenstance, there is no coincidence in politics. And on that score, at least, he was telling the truth.
Well, absolutely. And we've got to watch out. This entire Patriot Act and all these various pieces of it, these have been sitting on the shelf like Ruth Bader Ginsburg's obituary. And one morning they're going to say, okay, run it. And, you know, whatever the event is that triggers it, that'll be it.
Well, and we have...
Guys, they'll run the obituary. The only thing they have to fill in is
the date.
Immediate cause of death by hanging. Everything else has already been written.
All
we had to do with the Patriot Act was pull it off the shelf and do it.
Okay, well, Tim, we are less than 15 seconds from the music, at least if the clock is more or less right. But ultimately, what we're telling folks is here, I like to quote the prophet Hosea, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Unless Americans understand what the real law is, they're going to buy the imitation, the lie, and they'll accept all of the excuses that we've been talking about and all of the things that are masquerading as law. It's called color of law, and not know any better.
There is hope, at least as long as people can begin to understand what the real law is, and most certainly isn't. And in that case, it's important to know as well who we serve and who we shouldn't serve. And that includes those goose-stepping to the commands of the prince of this world. Thanks, Tim. Good evening, folks.